You know, after languishing for 5 or 6 years, all of a sudden gold came to life. It's up 16% for the year. It's up, I don't know, over 20% if you go back to where it was last year. But I don't know if this is the real thing or if this is just sort of a dead cat bounce. One man who does, and is probably the godfather of gold, is George Melling Stanley. He's vice president and chief gold strategist for State Street Global Advisors and pretty well invented GLD, the ETF. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, David. Appreciate the invitation.
So, now, I mean, you're dispassionate, right? I mean, is there ever a day that if I woke you up in the middle of the night, is there ever a night that you would say, I don't like gold?
Yeah, there probably would be. Most of the times when I don't like gold, I tend to go very, very quiet. If you can hear my voice, it's probable that I'm going to be being positive about this.
Well, you know, gold is so interesting. We've watched it, you know, once it finally became legal. And then there were all these gold bugs. He said, you know, the world's going to come to an end. There's going to be hyperinflation, and you need to have enough gold to bribe the border guard. I mean, the role of gold has changed somewhat, hasn't it?
No question. But let's get one thing clear at the outset, David. I'm not a gold bug. There's a wonderful little short story by Edgar Allan Poe that I enjoy reading from time to time. But I've never had more than 20% of my own personal money in gold. That doesn't qualify me for membership in that elite club. But ever since I first got involved in gold as a young reporter on a financial magazine in London back in the 1972 period, I've had about 5% of my wealth in gold as a strategic allocation. I rebalance that on a quarterly basis whenever I remember, and it's improved my Sharpe ratio over the last 47 years. That's why I tend to be positive about gold in the long run.
So what does it do for you, though? I mean, it doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't open up. It doesn't franchise itself or open up new divisions.
It's interesting. People say because it doesn't have a coupon or a dividend, it doesn't have a return. And that's not logical. That's a non sequitur. If you go back to 1971, when I first got involved, when President Nixon severed the last link between gold and money, the last legal link, that
is. You know, there are a lot of people listening to this who don't realize it was illegal to own gold
for 40 years, until 1975. That's right. But if you go back to 1971, since that period, right up to date, gold on a compound annual growth rate basis has returned 7.75%, which isn't too shabby for an asset that doesn't have a coupon or a dividend.
Now, one of the arguments against it was, you know, the way you own gold was you could buy, an ounce of gold, or you could buy a bar of gold, and then you could hide it and hope that your neighbors didn't know it. And then they came up with Krugerrands, which was sort of an easy way to own gold. Now the ETFs, and I know you've given birth to the GLD, which is probably one of the more popular ETFs. Does that still get you the same play?
Yeah, absolutely. It gets you exposure to movements in the gold price without the inconvenience of having to own, look after, and insure, or have a firearm, the physical asset itself. I mean, what do you do in practical terms with a big bar of gold? You probably have a very expensive doorstop if you chose to do that. And as I say, something you have to spend a lot of money to look after. GLD will take care of the gold for you. You don't own the gold. You own a trust, and the trust's only asset is gold. It's a very simple equation.
Well, so is it just about gold? Because I looked at the same time at what we sometimes on the air will call poor man's gold, silver, seem to be having, the same sort of moves.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I only deal in the precious metal, and there's really only one, David. Gold has utility as a commodity in the electronic applications that take up about 10% of each year's demand, has utility as a commodity in the 50 or 60% of each year's demand that goes into jewelry all around the world. But it's also regarded as an investment for the 25, 30% that goes into institutional or individual holdings, and as a monetary asset by central banks, which again accounts for 15% or so of each year's demand. Nothing else has all of those functions. Silver is largely an industrial metal. It does some fantastic things in pollution control and water filtration and bactericides and all sorts of medical imaging and things like that. But it tends to follow the fortunes of the base metals like copper, lead, and zinc much more than it follows the gold price. You might see occasional parallels with gold, but that's only people thinking that silver's going to follow gold higher.
You know, the nature of gold is different around the world. I mean, I think what it is here, but in India, I mean, gold is something entirely different.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quasi-religious, that definitely a social function for gold there, and there has been for thousands of years. Basically, Indian people don't trust paper currencies, and they don't trust their government, and thousands of years of history has shown that they're probably right, and they continue to behave that way. That's why they are one of the larger consumers in the world. But it's interesting that they were recently overtaken by China in terms of gold consumption. And again, I think you have the same sort of thing. You have a thousands of years of a history of gold being the right thing for them to turn to. So why would they ignore it now? It was the right thing then, and it makes sense for them now, too.
So the Chinese have turned to gold for the same reason the Indians did?
Very much so, yeah.
They don't trust their currency, don't trust their government?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen a huge increase in pure investment demand alongside good, solid jewelry demand, where there's always an element of store of value or preservation of wealth. But we've seen people buying pure investment products, small bars and coins and ETFs, where they have physically backed ETFs. And I think that's currency related. If you look around the emerging markets, you see one lousy currency after another, and you see them getting worse by the day as governments try to jawbone the value lower to generate export-led growth. So there's a good reason why people all across the emerging markets are buying gold as an investment and will continue to do so.
So, I mean, gold's been around forever, but you've been around sort of the leading edge of the popularity of gold. But you were, as you said, you were a writer for a financial magazine. Then what would you do, 20 years at Financial Times?
I did 10 years at the Financial Times. Then I worked for a gold mining company running something they were pleased to call gold market intelligence, which was just analyzing flows and supply demand and so forth. Moved to this country to trade gold for Shearson, which gradually morphed into Lehman Brothers. And the good news there is they let me go in 1995 rather than waiting until 2008, because in 1995 there were other jobs on Wall Street to be had, and I was young enough to get one of them.
Well, it sounds like you don't have a full-blown case, but maybe you got a little gold bug.
I believe in anything that improves my Sharpe ratio, and gold has done that on a very consistent basis for almost 50 years.
And I think it's a fascinating subject, gold, as George Billings Stanley's Vice President and Chief Gold Strategist for State Street Global Advisors. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD. For more on our conversation with Mr. Billings Stanley, go to krld.com/CEO.